You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. In Play Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the National Football League podcast. Here with William Hill, Dave Kellner in the studio, joined by Gil Alexander, who's stateside to look ahead to week number 8 in the National Football League. First of all, a warm welcome, a good morning to Gil Alexander. How are you doing, Gil?
I'm doing great, Dave. Good morning to you. I know you've forgiven us for crossing the Atlantic and forming the colonies, but I'm not sure you can forgive us for this quality of football game we're exporting to London.
Absolutely.
I apologize.
You've given us some treats this year. At least they saw points last week at Wembley, Gil, and we'll come on to the Detroit Lions versus the Kansas City Chiefs in due course. I know that, Gil, out there, I wake up every single when there's a World Series on, Gil, in the world of baseball. I wake up, look through Twitter, see lots of tweets I don't have any recognition of. I don't understand what's going on. But the first game in the World Series was, I know you split your time between baseball and the NFL. The first game was supposedly one of the games of all time, Gil.
It was, just unbelievable. I mean, I don't know how much you follow baseball, but baseball is not anywhere close to as popular as the NFL is in the United States from a national perspective. But the one thing that baseball does great is postseason drama. And for those familiar with baseball, with two outs left in the game in game one, basically about to lose game one, the home team, the Kansas City Royals, hit a game-tying home run off a previously, you know, unhittable relief pitcher. And the Royals ended up winning in game one in extra innings. They then went on to blow them away in game two. I mean, the Royals are just an amazing team. So it's the Kansas City Royals getting the best of the New York Mets, and it was just high drama. It was phenomenal.
I wish we'd have seen some of that drama last night in the NFL, Gil, because New England routed the Miami Dolphins in Foxborough, moved to 7-0 on the season. And in the Super Bowl era, 32 teams have started 7-0. Of those teams, this is a stat that I picked up from an NFL correspondent, all 32 made the playoffs, 15 advanced to the Super Bowl, and 9 of them won the Super Bowl. So if you're a New England Patriots fan, things are looking rosy in the garden at the moment, Gil.
You know, at this point, Dave, they appear to be playing a different sport than everybody else. I mean, I don't even know what to say about them anymore. Certainly, you know, I have a friend who's a Miami Dolphins fan. He was super excited after the last 2 weeks. Oh, Gil, look at us. We're awesome. I was like, yeah, just wait till you play New England. We'll see what happens. And sure enough, they just blew them out of the water last night. It wasn't even a competitive athletic event, you know, as you point out. And, yeah, New England's going to the playoffs. They're probably going to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And if they do get home field, they've got to be the favorite to go to the Super Bowl for sure.
Absolutely. Let's get stuck into this week's live matches then, Gil. And we start with the match that we've just referenced, the Detroit Lions versus the Kansas City Chiefs at Wembley, played at the neutral venue. The Lions 17-10 on the money line. The Chiefs are 1-2. This spread, Gil, is set at 4 at the moment. The Lions plus 4 at 10-11. The Chiefs minus 4, 10-11. And the total points is 45. The under, 10-11. The over is 10-11. I think, Gil, it's a testament to the thirst of the NFL fan here in the UK that this match is close to a sellout on Sunday afternoon. They did see points last week, but they're seeing two bad teams this week in the Lions, who are 1-6 in the NFC North, and the Chiefs 2-5 in the AFC West. Not much to say positively about this matchup, Gil.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to come up with something for you, Dave, and I will come up with something, right? But there isn't a high volume of great stuff to say about this. By the way, I had a gentleman on my show last week to talk about the Breeders' Cup, a horse racing event this week that I'm sure all horse racing buffs are familiar with that starts today and goes into tomorrow. Really, besides the Triple Crown, the biggest horse racing event. Anyway, he was in London on the call, and I said to him, I go, hey, listen, while you're there, can you tell me, is there a palpable buzz about the NFL in the air? And he goes, easy, Gil, relax with the palpable buzz stuff. He goes, but it just, I'm paraphrasing, but he said it is relevant, and he says they're definitely interested in it. I'm sorry again that this is the game. What can you say here is that, Detroit is a soap opera. So I guess that's what the real focus of this game is. Detroit's 1-6, Kansas City's 2-5. Detroit just fired everybody besides their head coach, basically. And most importantly, their offensive coordinator got fired, Joe Lombardi, and he was replaced by a gentleman named Jim Bob Cooter, who is about 3 years older than Matthew Stafford, the quarterback. He's 31 years old. And really, the issue hasn't been the Detroit offense. You know, Matthew Stafford's thrown 6 touchdown passes against just 1 pick the last 2 games. He has a 121 passer rating and a 71 total QBR. Take my word for it, those are good stats. But the offense for the season has averaged only 19.9 points. That's 29th out of 32 teams. Only 68 rushing yards per game. And, Dave, that's the real smoking gun. That's dead last in the NFL. And if you cannot run the ball at all, and 68 rushing yards a game pretty much qualifies as not at all, you're not going to do much, and their 1-6 record reflects that.
The thing about this matchup as well, Gil, is if we'd have been previewing this, say, in week one, and we'd have been looking ahead to this game in week eight, you'd have seen the Detroit Lions versus the Kansas City Chiefs. That was, back then, a matchup that you could really get excited about because Detroit seemed to have what you would consider a dynamic offense with Matthew Stafford, who you've just mentioned, under center. They're getting to see one of the elite wide receivers in the National Football League in Calvin Johnson as well. They have utilized Johnson more effectively the last 2 weeks, but they barely threw to him early on in the season, which just seemed ludicrous, and that's why there have been mass firings in the ranks in the last week at Detroit.
Well, I agree with that. I don't know if I've said it on your show or if I've only said it on mine, but, you know, I sort of half jokingly, and maybe not even half, maybe I'm not joking at all, when I say, shouldn't Detroit just throw the ball up to Calvin Johnson every single play and see what happens? I mean, sometimes it's just that simple. You're the tallest guy out there. You're the biggest guy out there. Just throw a jump ball and see if Calvin comes down with it. But, yes, you're right. Had we been talking about this at the beginning of September or in late August, we'd be saying, oh, wow, Jamaal Charles and the Chiefs against the Detroit offense. It looks like they've got a stacked backfield, right? Amir Abdullah and Joique Bell. And this could be a great game, a lot of points scored. Well, no Jamaal Charles because of a season-ending knee injury. And the Lions, you know, I mentioned that stat about rushing. They haven't scored a rushing touchdown in 4 straight games, and they only have 2 on the whole season. There's only one team that has less than that or fewer. That's the Jacksonville Jaguars with 1. And you got a glimpse of the Jaguars last week. Jaguars were able to come from behind and beat the Bills. But the Lions team that we're fondly thinking of, that's the one that came to Wembley last year, if you remember.
Yes.
They trailed the Falcons 21-0 at halftime, and then they roared back, no pun intended, with the Lions there, and they won it 22-21 on a Matt Prater field goal as time expired. But that team is long gone. You know, Matthew Stafford, who really over his career has been the best, you know, among the best quarterbacks at avoiding sacks, he took 7 of them last week. 7. And Detroit's defense, you know, they ranked 27th with an average of almost 400 yards allowed per game. That's nearly 100 more than last season. So it's not just the offensive side of the ball. But by the way, Kansas City, if you're thinking, okay, well, this must be a play on Kansas City. No, not really. You know, Alex Smith got sacked, or has been sacked, rather, 25 times this season, which is tied with Colin Kaepernick of the Niners for 2nd most. So he may get some help with Jeremy Maclin coming back, his standout receiver, who's coming back from a concussion. But, you know, Maclin, like Chiefs receivers, always happens to be the case. They don't score touchdowns. He only got 1 this year. So this is a real tough game to handicap with the Chiefs as a 4-point favorite, let alone having to travel across the Atlantic.
Do you think that line's where it should be then at 4, Gil?
I do, and if you force, you know, if you say, Gil, I'm choking you, you must pick a team, well, I will default to the underdog. I really will, despite everything I've said about the Lions. I'll take the 4 points, and, you know, and basically that will come down to who do I think is the better quarterback. I think Alex Smith is a better game manager, but I think Matthew Stafford is more explosive, has the potential to be anyway, and Matthew Stafford still has the best player on the field in Calvin Johnson. So if Jim Bob Cooter, their new offensive coordinator, wants to make an impact, just throw the ball to Megatron.
I agree. I'm taking the points here with the Lions plus four as well. You expect to see some sort of reaction to the coaching changes, at least in the first week. We saw it with the it's a completely different situation, but we saw it with the Miami Dolphins. New coach comes in, instant reaction. You'd expect to see something from the Detroit Lions, maybe in the running game this weekend.
You would expect to, and my final question on this is actually to you. Does the name Jim Bob Cooter secretly make you giggle like it does us?
Well, it makes me think of anyone from the South, Gil. Sort of your stereotypical Southern American name. I follow my golf, obviously. It's a Bubba Watson, isn't it? Jim Bob Cooter.
Right. That's right. I just wanted to know if you guys were hip to that. Clearly you are, yes. Jim Bob Cooter, ladies and gentlemen. I wish the best for Jim Bob.
Let's move on to the Cincinnati Bengals at the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is a 6 p.m. Start time here in the UK. The Bengals 20-21, the Steelers 20-23, and the spread, the Cincinnati Bengals plus 1.5, 20-23, the Pittsburgh Steelers minus the 1.5, 20-21, and the points line has been set at 48.5. The under is 10-11. The over in the betting at 10-11. Really looking forward to this divisional matchup, Gil. Bengals sitting at 6-0 in the division, the AFC North, and the Steelers are 4-3. The Steelers have actually won 3 in a row against the Bengals and 8 of the past 10 meetings as well. And I suppose this game revolves around Ben Roethlisberger and whether or not he's going to be fit. And if he is fit, whether he's fit enough to do himself justice this weekend, Gil, because the offense, the Steelers' offense, becomes an entirely different proposition with Roethlisberger at the helm.
It does, because, you know, last year you could make the case very easily, and no one would laugh at you, people would probably agree with you, that the single best running back in football was Le'Veon Bell, and the single best wide receiver in football was Antonio Brown. And we're learning, because of Big Ben's absence this year, that what you're saying is exactly right. Without Big Ben, suddenly, Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown are kind of ordinary because defenses really aren't that afraid of Landry Jones, Mike Vick, whoever you put in there to replace Big Ben. It's amazing what a great quarterback can do, and I think we can call Big Ben great. Even if he's not among the two or three elite, he's won a couple Super Bowls. He's had a great career. By the way, when he's been hurt and he comes back the next week, though, doesn't really translate immediately the Steelers' lifetime 2-4 straight up in the weeks after his injuries. But not knocking Big Ben. He's one of 33 quarterbacks with at least 85 pass attempts this season. And of those 33, he is numero uno, Dave, number one in total QBR, ESPN's proprietary stat, 0 to 100. He's got a 91.3. Now, it just so happens that Andy Dalton is number two in that category with 14 touchdowns and just 2 picks. And by the way, Dalton himself, 6 more touchdowns and 4 fewer interceptions than he has averaged through the first 6 games of all seasons in his career through 6 games. So a real good battle of quarterbacks. And this is, you know, we say this every week, and I'll be a broken record on this. We're going to learn a lot about the Bengals this week, aren't we?
We are, Gil. And just to pick up on one stat that you mentioned, went through a few stats there. The Roethlisberger stat, 2-4 after coming back from an injury. How much stock do you put in that statistic this week when thinking about handicapping this match?
You know, not a whole bunch, but more than, say, some of the other stats that I've heard thrown out about him. I heard one yesterday. Someone said, you know, he's 35-8 lifetime versus teams from Ohio. And I'm like, what is that? It's in Cincinnati and Cleveland? What are you talking about? So apparently he went to college in Ohio, did Big Ben. So apparently the angle there is he has this big, you know, desire to do well against teams from Ohio. But 2-4 after an injury, you know, I don't really base a whole bunch on it, but it's interesting because it sort of says, well, maybe they're not going to instantaneously be spectacular on Sunday. But this really is, you know, the Bengals have never been 7-0 in franchise history. I don't know that they've ever been 6-0. I believe we had that stat last week as well. The Bengals are really good. You know, there's 5 undefeated teams in football still. We've never gone this far into a season with 5 undefeated teams. It really is a testament to the haves and the have-nots. The former commissioner of the NFL, Pete Rozelle, who really brought the NFL to prominence in the 60s and 70s, his big dream was parity. And he would be rolling over in his grave right now if he knew just how little parity there is right now. And Cincinnati is one of the undefeateds. And dare I say, this is not your mother and father's Cincinnati Bengals. It's not your mother and father's Andy Dalton. I think they're for real. And I wouldn't be too quick to go against them, even with Big Ben's return.
They are healthy as well, Gil, something we've not mentioned yet. The Steelers' defense, they're nuts. Linebacker Terrence Garvin, expected to be out with a knee injury. They'll also be without cornerback William Gay, defensive end Stephon Tuitt, and safety Will Allen might be out as well. Andy Dalton, the aforementioned, can expose those weak areas with his weapons. Tyler Eifert, we've mentioned on the podcast in previous weeks, having an outstanding season, and AJ Green, of course, their elite wide receiver. So the Bengals fully healthy, the Steelers not, and that could be a decisive factor in this matchup as well.
I think Allen and Gay's injuries are particularly noteworthy in that secondary, and you hit on it. Andy Dalton just has so many weapons, and I think that that's the differentiator. Tyler Eifert is the real difference. He was hurt again game one last season, out for the entire season last year, and we really never got a chance to see how good this kid is. And really outside of Gronkowski and maybe still Jimmy Graham, he's right there in terms of effective tight ends in the NFL. So if you have Eifert, who's an elite tight end, it appears. If you've got A.J. Green, who's certainly an elite wideout, but then you throw in Marvin Jones, and then out of the backfield, Giovanni Bernard, and, you know, Jeremy Hill before the season was supposed to be the guy. He hasn't done much at all. He's still there. So, you know, that's a lot to work with, and it's why the Bengals, you know, are 6-0, big reason why they're 6-0 anyway. So even with Big Ben coming back, I mean, I'd lean Bengals here. Wouldn't be a play for me necessarily, but I would lean that way. Until I see them vanquished, I like them.
Yeah, we do have a couple of headline offers here with William Hill as well. AJ Green to score a touchdown and the Bengals to win is 5-2, and Le'Veon Bell to score a touchdown and the Steelers to win in the market 2-1. So not necessarily a play, Gil, but the Bengals receiving the points here with the extra juice here, plus 1.5 at 20-23. That's the lean, Gil.
That's my lean, absolutely. And there's not really much more to say other than until I see a chink in the armor, I'm not going to fade Cincinnati. No way.
9:05 p.m. UK time, we have the New York Jets at the Oakland Raiders. The money line, the New York Jets are 20-31, the Oakland Raiders 27-20, and this spread is set at 3 currently. The Jets minus 3, 10-11, the Raiders plus 3 at 10-11. First of all, before we get stuck into the matchup, Gil, any line movement here?
That's a very good question. The line has moved some, yes. This opened as the Jets at minus 1.5, was quickly moved to 2 or 2.5. And now as we do this on Friday morning my time, so that's about 48 hours before game time, a little more than 48 hours before game time, it's at 3, and I expect it to be 3 at game time. I always expected this to get up to 3. This was one of the two games when I do my guessing line show when lines are first out on Monday. I loved the Jets, and my colleague Chris Andrews, who's a bookmaker of 30 years in the state of Nevada, he loved the Jets too. This is probably my biggest lean on the day. Not as much at 3 as it was at 1.5, but I still love the Jets here.
The Jets minus 3 at 10-11. They have won 6 of the past 8 meetings against the Oakland Raiders. I'm excited by this game, though, because at least the Raiders, Gil, one of the worst performing franchises in recent history, they're beginning to show a little bit of sparkle.
They are, and there's no question they're better than they were. I mean, they won three games all of last year, right? They were 3-13. They're 3-3 already. So, I mean, that the proof is in the pudding, right? They're a better football team than they were, and that can be attributed to the fact that Derek Carr at quarterback is really a good young player, and he's got two good weapons in Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. However, there's the old transition, Dave. However, he hasn't faced a defense like that of the Jets. And the Jets, by the way, I can say the same thing about the Jets. They were 4-12 last year. They've already won four games this year. They're much improved, too. But that defense is for real. I mentioned this on one of the videos I did for William Hill. Their defense, in terms of yards per carry allowed, number one in the NFL, just 3.4 yards per carry allowed. In terms of yards per pass attempt, number two in the NFL behind the Broncos D at 5.3 yards per pass attempt allowed. And overall, 4.5 yards per play allowed. That's the number two defense in the league. So a lot will be made of the Jets' defense, and that's no news flash. That's no breaking news for anybody. Here's the part that I think doesn't get enough credit for the Jets. That's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick, by the way, for your listeners, Dave, went to Harvard, by the way. Can we talk about that for a second? Kid went to Harvard. Fourth in total QBR in the NFL this year. We don't tend to think of Ryan Fitzpatrick as one of the four best quarterbacks in the NFL.
No.
But in terms of ESPN's proprietary advanced stat, he's four. And in terms of avoiding sacks, listen to this. I mean, we talked about Matthew Stafford getting sacked seven times last week. Ryan Fitzpatrick has only been sacked on 1.8% of all of their pass plays. That's the lowest mark in the NFL this season. You're going to win a lot of football games not getting sacked.
This is the litmus test. You've mentioned the numbers there about the Jets' defense, and this is the litmus test for Derek Carr and that young offense as well. The way the Jets will work, they still try as they have done and probably succeed in shutting down the running game of Latavius Murray. And in addition to that, they know they've got a cornerback of Darrell Revis's quality on the outside to deal with Amari Cooper. So that's how they're going to try and nullify Oakland and their offense, and they'll hope that Ryan Fitzpatrick will be able to keep those numbers up on that side of the ball, and they'll try and squeeze the life out of this Oakland Raiders team.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, you know, when you have Darrell Revis and Antonio Cromartie as your cornerbacks, you can do a lot on defense. Because those guys, I mean, there's a reason why Revis has the nickname Revis Island. If you can put those guys in single coverage, in other words, if you can afford to do that, which the Jets can, man, I mean, you can blitz, you can dog, you can do all kinds of things with that defense. And then against a young quarterback, and Derek Carr, for as much success as he has had early this season, still a young quarterback. So they're going to throw some things at him that are going to be unfamiliar to him. Todd Bowles is a defensive mind. He comes from that side of the ball as a former Super Bowl champion with the Redskins at safety. He is going to have a whole bunch worked up for Derek Carr. And one more note on Ryan Fitzpatrick before I let it go, because I'm sort of Ryan Fitzpatrick fixated. I can't believe some of these numbers. Because it's amazing how we don't give this guy credit,
yeah.
But he's had you know, even when he played the Redskins, I noticed how really smart he was when scrambling. He was able to avoid sacks. He scrambled at the real, not often, but at strategic times. Well, he also happens to be in the top five of expected points added at his position. So he is really adding value to that position. By the way, just to give a, you know, sort of comparative, he's ahead of Cam Newton in that category. So Ryan Fitzpatrick is playing at an elite level. And when you combine that with the defense, I love the Jets here.
The Jets minus three, the pick. I don't want to hark on about the New England Patriots too long, for too long, Gil, but last week they beat the Jets by 7 points, having overturned that fourth quarter deficit. Tom Brady dropped back to pass 90% of the time against the Jets. Historically in the NFL, the consideration is that you can, if you make a team one-dimensional, you're halfway to winning the battle. The Patriots become one-dimensional to win their games, which is they almost flip it on its head, which is remarkable.
Yeah, there's nothing you said that is incorrect there. I just think the Patriots throw every old adage out of books. You know, Tom Brady is something else. And they realized, the Patriots did, look, how are we going to beat this defense? We're not going to beat them on the ground. We're not going to beat them with a conventional offense. Let's take a quick drop back and get the ball out of your hands within a heartbeat, that's how we're going to play him. And so Tom Brady threw, as you point out, a ridiculous amount of time, short passing game, quick, and that's how you beat the Jets. So if the Raiders, you know, the Raiders are going to try, I'm sure. They saw that blueprint. They're going to try to do something about that. But the Jets will adjust, having, you know, they know that that's what the thinking is going to be. The Jets will adjust, and I don't know that Derek Carr is Tom Brady. And so easier said than done. Tom Brady makes a lot look easy that isn't easy at all.
On to prime time then, Gil. Two of the most exciting matchups this weekend, and the Green Bay Packers first up at the Denver Broncos. Sunday night football, early Monday morning here in the UK. The Green Bay Packers 5-7 on the money line. The Denver Broncos are 6-5, and this spread, the Packers now -2.5 at 20-23. The Broncos +2.5 at 20-21. Two 6-0 teams here, Gil, and two juggernauts in the National Football League as well, doing battle prime time. And even though this might not be a defining game as far as the playoff hopes are concerned, I think we will have a clearer understanding of their respective Super Bowl prospects at the end of this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, although Denver is in such a, you know, a division that they could probably absorb a few losses and still make the playoffs. But Green Bay, yeah, you know, they've got to keep pace with some of those other teams in the AFC. Obviously, Denver trying to keep pace with the Patriots. Where do we start with this game?
This is a belter, isn't it?
Yeah. What did you call it, a belter?
A belter, yes.
I love that. I got to use that on my show. By the way, I learned another phrase from my horse racing guy. He said when you bet on an underdog horse, you're laying, what did he say, laying the jolly?
Yeah, the jolly, yes. The jolly is the, that's what we describe the favorites over here as, Gil, the jolly.
I love that. this is all new to me. But the Packers and the Broncos, more to the point, both teams coming off a bye here, so there's extra rest for both teams, which probably is a good thing for Peyton Manning's 175-year-old arm. But it's also a great thing for the Packers because they're getting back Davante Adams, their receiver, B.J. Raji, their nose tackle, safety Morgan Burnett, Nick Perry, their linebacker. Eddie Lacy's healthier. He's going to be the starting running back. So the rest helps both teams. And I guess we're inclined to talk about Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning, but let's do it the opposite. Let's talk about these defenses because these defenses are really the surprising part. Not surprising, but they're really the differentiators for both of these teams this year, and a big reason why they're both undefeated. They are 1-2 in terms of points allowed in the NFL this season, and of course no stat is more important than that. That's the name of the game. But while Denver is 1 point behind Green Bay for fewest allowed, 20 of its 102 points that have come against the Broncos are on three Peyton Manning pick sixes. So really it's the Broncos defense that has been the standout of them all. The Denver defense ranks first in total QBR allowed, first in efficiency, first in sacks, first in drive score percentage against. I can go on and on. Here's the amazing thing. They've scored a touchdown in 4 of 6 games this season. Not only touchdowns in 4 of 6 games, but Dave, 18 takeaways, 26 sacks by 12 different players in just 6 games. That's incredible. And so the question becomes, is that who they played against largely because of that, or is it that they're just that good? Because remember, the Broncos' first 6 opponents hold a combined record of 13-27. So you're not exactly playing the 85 Bears or the 91 Redskins here. So that's something to consider. And by the way, Green Bay's defense, just to finish the thought, not too far behind any of those things. Third in total QBR allowed at 23.1. In other words, they're holding opposing quarterbacks to that low of a rating, and they've gotten 23 sacks themselves, so just behind the Broncos in that category. So it's really about these defenses, and the assessment on this game, I think, ought to start there.
If these defenses do maintain that consistency into this game, and Denver is just in front of Green Bay in terms of production on defense, we know which quarterback is the better of the two quarterbacks right now at this point in their careers. Aaron Rodgers is an incredible quarterback, and he's maintaining his level, whereas Peyton Manning, as we've mentioned on the podcast before, has dropped his consistency, has dropped at an alarming rate throughout the course of the season so far. So if you maintain that the defenses both turn up, then it's who gets the job done on offense.
I think you're right. I think that's exactly it. That's my handicap on the game. I had a couple, you know, my staple guests on my show, both really liked Denver in this spot. And it had a lot. One of them, the reasoning I remember the most is my friend Marco D'Angelo talked about how Denver's schedule has been rough in terms of travel, and how this is just a great spot for them in a prime time game for several reasons. I don't buy that. I'm really about the simplification of this, and I agree with you. You got two great defenses, and then you look at the offenses and you say to yourself, how is Peyton Manning in that offense going to keep up with Aaron Rodgers? Because at some point, I'm not saying Denver's D is not going to have success against Aaron Rodgers, but at some point Aaron Rodgers is going to get the ball into the end zone. And I'm not so sure Peyton Manning can keep up with that. Two touchdowns and seven picks for Peyton Manning in the Broncos' last three games. He hasn't thrown for 300 yards in any of those three games, and his passer rating hasn't even gotten to 70. By the way, that scale is out of 158. So that's not good. And we talked about this with the Broncos, with the Lions. Well, the Broncos rushing offense, not much better. They rank 30th out of 32 teams, just 85 yards per game. So if you can't get anything going on the ground, you're not giving Peyton much help. And even though Peyton has only lost twice all time in Denver since he got there in 2012, he lost once in 2012 and then once in 2013. They haven't lost a home game since. The advanced stats to me are the smoking gun, and I'll leave you here with this, Dave. Expected points added per game, an advanced stat that we've talked about in previous shows week after week. I get this from Mike Sando over at ESPN, who does great work. Peyton Manning and the Broncos offense in 2014, they were plus 8.5 expected points added per game on offense, meaning that they were producing that many more points than the average team would given the circumstances. Well, this year, instead of being plus 8.5, they're minus 4.4 expected points added per game. That's by far the biggest drop-off of any team in the NFL. And as a point of comparison, take the Dallas Cowboys. That's 61% worse than the drop-off in Dallas. And keep in mind, they don't have their quarterback, Tony Romo.
Yes.
So that kind of tells you how Peyton Manning's deterioration has gone. And, you know, the old statement, Father Time is undefeated.
Absolutely. I'm with you. The Green Bay Packers minus 2.5 at 20-23. So laying a little bit of extra juice, taking it down through that key number, minus 2.5, the Packers, and the Broncos plus 2.5 in the game Sunday night. On to Monday night, Gil, the Indianapolis Colts at the Carolina Panthers, and the Colts 5-2 in this matchup on the money line. The Panthers are 1-3, and the spread, the Colts plus the 7 with extra juice at 5-6, and the Panthers minus 7 at even money. The Panthers, Gil, are beginning to look like the real deal now. We talked about them on last week's podcast, and they beat the Philadelphia Eagles despite turning the ball over on numerous occasions. Prior to that, they'd got that statement win against the Seattle Seahawks. We're sitting up and taking notice of the Panthers now, Gil.
We are 6-0, another 6-0, another undefeated team, and we are taking notice. I think that's a good way to put it. Here's why we should take notice. They've won 10 straight regular season games. I mean, that's unbelievable. Before that, they lost, or I think they were 0-6-1 before that in the seven games prior to it. So as we mentioned last week, what a strange streakiness to a team now over the course of what would amount to more than one regular season. So yeah, 10 in a row, 6-0 this year. The problem with the 6-0, if we're looking for a negative, they haven't beaten anyone with a winning record. So that's something to think
yes.
about. Meanwhile, the Colts are 3-4 but still lead their division. So I don't know. This is a tough one in terms of the number, because I think the number is kind of where it ought to be.
I think, Gil, we could put together a team to lead the AFC South, though.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think so. We may win a game. I mean, Houston's in there, Tennessee's in there, Jacksonville. I mean, the Colts really have their run. You know, the Colts have won 15 straight against their division opponents. 15 in a row. Sadly for them, Carolina's not in the AFC South.
Absolutely. And I look at this matchup, Gil. I know you've said the number looks to be where it should be at 7. It looks like a horrible matchup for the Indianapolis Colts. The running game is just so strong. They lead the NFL with 144.7 yards per game, and they have gained at least 100 yards in 17 straight matches now. And the New Orleans Saints managed to run on the Indianapolis Colts last week, so that matchup looks like a horrific matchup for the Colts.
Yeah, the way I put it on my show, or the way I tried to phrase it, was that, you know, Andrew Luck, we talk about his propensity to throw picks these days, and it's justified. He has 9 interceptions this year, and he's really got to ratchet that back. But it's the offensive line. He was sacked 4 times last week. That offensive line has given up 15 total sacks between Andrew Luck and Matt Hasselbeck behind center. 15. And that goes a long way towards explaining the fact that they have a league-high 16 holding penalties as well. So when they're not giving up sacks, they're desperately holding on to dear life to not get Andrew Luck or Matt Hasselbeck sacked. Mm. And now they play the Carolina defense, which, as you point out, this is not a good matchup for them, because the defense at Carolina, they've got 18 sacks, and 9 of them were in the last 2 weeks. They've allowed only one opponent to throw for 300 yards. They're giving up 4.8 yards per play on defense. That's the 3rd best mark in the NFL. And so on paper, given all of that as a backdrop, you're sort of thinking to yourself, well, the Colts have no chance here. But, you know, as one of the guys on my show likes to say, Vegas Runner, he says, you know, the spread is the great equalizer. Can the Colts cover here? Yeah, they could probably cover, because Andrew Luck can throw you into any game. My beef with the Colts is the fact that they have these receivers that seem to want to dance even when they score and the Colts are still trailing. And that, to me, not to sound like I'm, you know, 100 years old, but that to me says more about the mentality of your players than anything else.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. You see teams that are getting it happens in the NFL often, I think, Gil. You see teams that are getting blasted and they're 40 points down, and then someone records a sack and dances, and you're thinking, well, your team's trailing by 40 points. That's we don't see that often in the Premier League, when a team is losing by 3 or 4 goals and they score, they're in a hurry to get the ball back and restart. It's a different mentality, I think, in the NFL.
And it didn't used to be that way in the NFL 20 years ago, by the way. It did not. It's a modern age thing where a lot of these guys don't really have their heads in the game as much as you'd think they would. Because if they did, they'd just look at the scoreboard and they'd pipe down a little bit. And I guess, though, you know, not to belabor it, but the one thing that I mentioned was you just simply wouldn't see that on a team like the New England Patriots. In 0% possibility, there's 0% possibility that any player playing for Bill Belichick would do such a thing. And by the way, if they did, they'd be cut the next day. So if you think what I'm saying is sort of a, you know, an old man on his porch saying, get off the grass, you know, kind of thing, I really don't believe it to be the case. I really think it means a lot about, you know, especially if you're going to put money behind certain teams. It's just tough to feel great about a team like that, especially when you're talking about putting money, you know, your own money behind that kind of thing. It's not easy to wrap your brain around sometimes.
Have you got a lean in this game then, Gil?
Yeah, I mean, I would lean Carolina. I would. So if it gets to 6.5, and you might see some 6.5s at some point, I would definitely lean Carolina, because I do like that combination. And it's a home game, and it's a Monday night game, so you know they're not going to let down the Panthers, that is, because they're in a primetime audience. But this is a 3rd straight primetime game in a row for them, if you count that win at Seattle in the afternoon game, which was seen by most of the country 2 weeks ago. So that and the win against the Eagles in primetime last week, I like the Panthers here as a lean.
Good stuff. Thank you, Gil. We've been through our 5 matches that are televised here in the UK this weekend. What are your top 5 picks this week, Gil?
Well, we'll start with the Jets. We already talked about that. That would be pick number 1, the Jets. Even at -3, I like the Jets. I like them a whole bunch at -1.5 and anything below 3. But if you get them at -3, it's still a play on the Jets. They're my first pick. Second pick, well, I'm going back to the well here for a couple on my #2 and #3, Dave. Last week was a frustrating week for me. I dipped below 60% in the Super Contest because I missed 2 tough ones. And the one that I missed that wasn't tough at all and I deserved to lose was betting on the Lions against the Vikings. Well, I'm going against the Vikings again. I'm taking the Bears as my second pick. The Vikings, even in victory, didn't do anything to impress me, and the Bears are coming off a bye. They got extra rest here. They're at home. I like the Bears minus one here against the Vikings. They're pick number two. Pick number three for me, just in that same vein, I had Dallas last week against the Giants. Three Matt Castle second half picks. I know you were on Dallas as well, Dave, so you remember this. They gave up a kickoff return. You're giving me 6 points against the Seahawks at home. I love Dallas's running game. I love their offensive line. I love their pass rush. You're giving me 6 points. I'm taking the Cowboys again. So Dallas is my third pick. Pick number four, Baltimore, 1-6 at home against the Chargers, giving 3.5. I love Baltimore here. In all six Ravens losses, Dave, they've had a chance to win or tie the game with the ball in the fourth quarter. Five of their first seven have been on the road. Finally, they're back home. They're not as bad as a 1-6 team. They're not even close to that bad. I like Baltimore as my fourth pick. And pick number five is the Packers, which we already talked about. I love the Packers for all the reasons we gave about that Peyton Manning offense in Denver. So, again, the picks for me are the Jets, the Chicago Bears, the Dallas Cowboys, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Green Bay Packers.
Good stuff. Thank you, Gil. As always, one of the favourite points of my week, talking to you on the NFL podcast. Make sure you check out Gil's podcast. Find it at Beating the Book on Twitter. That's where you can follow Gil. You've got Vegas Runner, Marco D'Angelo. And who's the special guest this week, Gil?
Johnny Detroit, who won the Super Contest back in 2004, a long time ago.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Make sure you check out that podcast. I'll be doing so this evening. Thank you for listening to William Hill's NFL podcast. Remember, you can follow myself on Twitter at dkellner, Gil at Beating the Book, and we'll chat for week number 9. Speak again soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.